afternoon now, after a delicious lunch. We're going to have Philippe Dam from Human Rights Watch. He works here in the UN office, and he'll be focusing on mobilizing civil society.
Hi, everybody. So I've been asked to speak about mobilizing civil society, which is a bit broad, vague, so I'll try to be as focused as possible, but I'll try to leave as much time as possible for your questions, because I think this is really what is the more important. So just to start with maybe a couple of ideas. When NGOs engage within the UPR, it's important for all of us to, you know, remain realistic about what we can achieve and to know exactly what the UPR is, but also what it is not. NGOs often, and we all often expect the UPR to become a mechanism which is, you know, forcing reforms in our countries, but it's okay? Okay. Mind what the UPR is not. It's not, for example, a human rights court, a global human rights court. It's not a UN expert mechanism. So it's only a group of states, you know, reviewing your government and making it recommendations. So it's mostly a diplomatic exercise and not an expert-led mechanism, which is, of course, often below what we expect in terms of substance. The UPR remains also very much driven by the states, and in particular, the government reviewed. The country concerned remains the star of the show in a way, and it's not a mechanism which is meant at putting a country in the defensive situation, but rather, you know, to have a debate on a variety of issues. The UPR is not going to be helpful necessarily for most of the cases to focus on a small number of issues, but will address a broad array of human rights. So the issue or the few issues that your individual organizations might work on, you know, will certainly not be extensively covered by states' comments. In addition, when you keep in mind that states only speak for 1 or 2 minutes each, you know, it's difficult to find the issue that you bring forward to be, you know, addressed in substantive depth. And therefore, from our perspective as NGOs, we like to write 80-page reports about, you know, a few cases, which is fundamental. The way in which it's translated within the UPR is often very disappointing. So, in a way, the UPR is simply a mechanism which helps. Comme ça? Okay. Comme ça, c'est bon? Okay. Which helps, you know, making a picture about the behavior of your government in front of its human rights obligations and its capacity to be transparently engaging with other actors on its human rights record. It shows how your government is able to engage with its peers on human rights issues. And the UPR is mostly a tool, but doesn't trigger changes itself. So when NGOs engage within the UPR, it's important for us to keep in mind that our role is to try to turn this kind of very formal mechanism, which is often negative, into a positive one. And we need to consider the UPR simply as a tool, as a forum or as a space where our advocacy can have an impact, and where we need to use the international nature of the process, its public nature, its visibility, to try to have as much impact as possible. This one doesn't work. No, it doesn't work. So. As NGOs, we need to really have a very functional approach, right? A very functional approach to use this mechanism and try to maximize its impact. So what are these positive components that we need to use? First of all, it's a political process. So states engage with, your governments would engage with other governments. So it's basically, you know, a way for push for our recommendations, our NGO recommendations, to be reflected by governments in engaging with your own government. So, you know, oftentimes the recommendations that we as NGOs have been making over and over again without having any feedback from our governments are suddenly picked up by other states during the review, and sometimes it's, you know, the first time we get an answer from our governments. An example was when Human Rights Watch has been pushing for years for an investigation commission on the disappearances in Lebanon. We never received any feedback from the Lebanese government up to the moment when actually the Ministry of Foreign Affairs had to respond positively to this recommendation made in the context of the UPR, and it was quite an important step from our perspective. A second positive element of the UPR is its public nature, which helps to make the governments accountable towards the international community, but towards its domestic constituencies as well. It's also a public series of discussions, so it has a lot of visibility. And it often forces governments concerned to set up a domestic process in order to more transparently develop their national report, to show that they engage domestic NGOs, and to show that they also will follow up on the recommendation that they would have accepted. So, of course, it's most of the time to make governments look good, but nevertheless, the process is sometimes there. So mobilizing NGOs is important because our number is our strength, but we should make sure it doesn't become our weakness. So I think you already had a number of discussions about how to best coordinate NGO inputs into the different phases of the mechanisms. It can become very cumbersome, but you know the interest of the UPR is that the time used to prepare and engage within this mechanism should really be maximized. Producing a 5 or 10 page document should not take you weeks and weeks. It should be quickly done, but it can have an impact. You can burden share in engaging with governments domestically in the context of your advocacy. And your number should become a strength when you engage with other stakeholders. So I'll try to focus on how it's basically up to us as NGOs to make of the UPR an important moment, to mobilize ourselves, but also to use our strengths to mobilize other actors to look at the mechanism as it's occur. Because if it remains only a mechanism where your government is defending its human rights record in front of the international community, with us complaining and making recommendations which are sometimes picked up, sometimes reflected, sometimes accepted or rejected, it becomes, you know, only a bubble. And our role now, in particular, as we engage into the second cycle, is really to try to extract the UPR from its bubble and to make it a moment that we can use as much as possible. So three possible targets which we as NGOs, once we are mobilized, we should seek at mobilizing ourselves. First of all, our government, the governments of the reviewed government, of the reviewed country. How to do it? Well, first of all, we often have NGOs complaining about the lack of open, transparent consultations with NGOs. That's often a feature, which is absolutely true. I think it's also up to us to try to mobilize our governments and to make known publicly and openly what we expect. What should be the basic lines for ensuring a transparent and open consultation with NGOs? Should your governments organize one or several consultations? Should these consultations be, you know, thematically spread out? Should your government organize consultations with NGOs in other cities than the capital? Does it make sense? When should these consultations be organized? I mean, it's also up to you to define, you know, what you expect from your government in terms of engaging with you in its preparations to the UPR, to its UPR report, because it's often too easy for government just to say that they organize a couple of meetings with NGOs and that's it. But that's not what we wanted. It's also up to us to guide the way in which, you know, we want our governments to engage with us. So you can do that through open letters, through, you know, pre-meetings with government officials, which would help to make your government accountable on degree of these consultations.